Welcome to another episode of Mama Earth Talk. I'm your host, Mariska Nal. Realizing just how much waste we generate on a daily basis, I've set a personal goal not only to reduce, reuse, and recycle, but to also educate the world about sustainability and how each of us can help preserve our beautiful planet. Thanks for listening. Let's dig in. Hello, crazy birds. I hope you're all well and having a super fantastic day wherever it is that you're listening to this episode. Today, I have a really awesome guest, and she actually helped me to travel to Antarctica. For those of you thinking, like, Mariska, you should have probably told us when you visited Antarctica. I actually only visited it in a virtual reality, but oh my goodness, it felt like it was a real thing. It felt like for that 20 minutes that I was actually there looking at those penguins, seeing what it is to live there. So I would probably tick it down as I've been there. So today is such an amazing guest. Like, she is the founder and the creative director of White Spark Pictures. And she's driven by a passion for storytelling. And through her innovative work in film, she inspires change and actually elevates environmental awareness. She is a critically acclaimed director and executive producer, and she has spearheaded a number of projects, including Impossible Planet, Beyond the Milky Way, notably her groundbreaking VR hit, The Antarctica Experience, which I mentioned earlier, earned her actually the Channel 7s in Western Australia's Western Australia Young Achiever of the Year Award. And she's also received other awards, including 40 Under 40 winner in 2020, and also the Screen Producers Australia Want to Watch, as well as the winner of 2020's ECU International Alumni Award. And during this episode, we discuss how her origins of her sustainable journey actually intertwined with her storytelling with environmental advocacy, and how she emphasized the importance of factual content. And we also delved into the groundbreaking VR project, the Antarctica Experience, and also explored some really exciting and new projects that she has in the pipeline for all of our crazy birds to see in the future. So, crazy birds, without any further ado, I would like to welcome Bridge Whitehead. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And yeah, don't worry, no one ever gets my name right either.
I love it. It's actually fun to have a unique name because, you know, then people can kind of always ask those questions. Oh, how do you pronounce your name? What is this? What does it mean? In the beginning, I was like, oh my gosh, why do I have such a difficult name? And now I'm like, I'm actually unique because no one else have my name.
No, I can relate. I've come to like it. As a kid growing up, you just want to fit in. And so if you can't have your name seen on a cup or whatever it might be, then you get disappointed. But when you're an adult, you learn to love it.
I know. So for everyone with strange names, you'll definitely learn to love it if you don't love it already by now. But yeah, so Rich, how did your sustainable journey actually start?
Well, I think it started from my childhood because I grew up in the Wheat Belt region of Western Australia, which for people who don't know where that is, it's a huge area. I think it's like five times the size of Tasmania, wheat and sheep country, beautiful, beautiful part of the world, really underrated as well. So growing up in the country, you're just always naturally surrounded by incredible nature. My family were in a farming background, so you really see firsthand what the land can give you and how my granddad in particular was really sustainably minded. So I think it was just a natural part of my upbringing. Childhood walks, which sometimes I used to hate, but my mum would walk us through nature and we'd stop every 2 seconds. Half the time we weren't getting any exercise because it was, look at this trapdoor spider hole that I found, or look at how the paper bark's changed like this through here, or this means this part of the season and it's changing and there's more than just four seasons in a year and things like that. So I'm really grateful of my upbringing in that respect, because it gave me a really great deeper understanding and connection to the land and the country as well. So yeah, and then I think through school and university, that just sort of amplified to the point where I remember having arguments with friends of mine, nice arguments, but arguments around climate change at university, and I didn't really have all the information I wanted to be able to articulate what I was trying to say. So I went and did units such as atmospheric and oceanographic sciences so that I could really understand the processes on a greater level. And that really kicked off a whole next type of journey, which was just learning and understanding more about our planet.
Wow, that's amazing. And fun fact for all of our crazy birds, you actually studied at ECU as well. That's where I just finished my degree as well, the School of Science, which is fun. So adding it in there.
Yeah, ECU is great. I did my master's degree there. I did a double bachelor degree at Curtin University and also in Toronto in Canada for a while as well.
Oh, wow. And you are like the founder and the creative director at White Spark Pictures. Like, can you share with our crazy birds what exactly that is?
Yeah, so White Spark Pictures is predominantly a factual production company based in Perth, Western Australia. So we produce television, documentary TV series for Discovery Channel, worked on projects with Nat Geo, Netflix, all around the world, really global productions. That might be in science, in natural history, crime, anything in the factual space. Been fortunate enough to go to Antarctica twice now with my work, and it's really taken me to some, and our company, into some really amazing, hard to get to places. And we also do virtual reality documentaries, which is a more emerging but very fastly growing industry, which creates still documentaries, but rather than you watching a screen on your TV, you're in the story. So 360 degrees, everywhere you look, you're surrounded by the subject matter. So rather than storytelling, we call it story living. And that's predominantly what the two main arms of our company are, is virtual reality and television.
I love that. And I mean, I can actually say that I've been to Antarctica once in a virtual reality by watching your Antarctica experience, which is just honestly, for me, it was phenomenal because I've never been to Antarctica. I've never experienced that, but being dropped in there with your virtual reality, it really made me see everything and kind of, you know, I was like looking up and down and like going everywhere. Like, while we're on that, like, can you maybe share with us what exactly is this Antarctica experience?
It's exactly almost as you've described. It's designed to be the next best thing to being in Antarctica. Most people won't get the chance to go, or even if they do, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to see what it's like to live and work down on the icy continent. So this is the next best thing. It gives people a really exciting day in the life of an Antarctic scientist and expeditioner. So you start by being placed at Davis Research Station, which is in East Antarctica, get a tour of the station itself, see what a normal station life looks like. Then you're out in a zodiac to some of the surrounding islands, where you're then surrounded by 10,000 Adélie penguins in a massive Adélie penguin colony. And they're literally running right past you, screaming after the adults for food. It's immersive and all 3D, 360 degrees. So it's like you're standing there and all these penguins are running around you. Then we take people to the skies via helicopter. They land on glaciers, learn firsthand from scientists and glaciologists about climate change and the work that they do down in Antarctica. And we leave people surrounded by the amazing southern lights as well. So it's a really immersive, next best thing to being there experience, and also elevating that, because even if you did go to Antarctica, you're probably not likely to have some of those experiences.
Wow, that's amazing. And I mean, when I spoke to you, because I actually met you at West Tech Fest, and that's where I saw the Antarctica experience, and it was really amazing. And there was something that you also mentioned, that with this virtual reality, you guys were able to actually share that experience of going to Antarctica with like a granddad and his grandson, which went together, but the granddad obviously wasn't in Antarctica. He was like experiencing it. Can you maybe share about that? Because that was quite a interesting one as well.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. I mean, there's so many, but to give more context, the way in which we screen our films is within a traditional theatrical experience. So it won't just be an individual journey. You'll be in a normal cinema or potentially in a museum space where you put on a VR headset, but it's with 50 to 100 other people in the room. So you all simultaneously go to Antarctica at the same time with external surround sound. So it means that you can still converse through the whole experience, and it makes the whole journey a shared experience, which is what our second sister company does, SurroundSync. It's a patent pending technology. We're the first ones to do it in the world. And that's really driven a lot of the success that the film has had as well. But that means that, yeah, one of my favorite examples is the oldest person to have watched Antarctica is 103, permanently in a wheelchair. And he took his 5-year-old great-grandson. And through SurroundSync, through the shared experience system, they both went to Antarctica at the same time. The whole conversation, you could hear them like, "Granddad, look behind you, there's a penguin here," or "look out the helicopter window." And it was just this beautiful experience that they'd never get to do in real life. And then the impact and the power and the enjoyment was just awesome.
Oh, that's amazing. And going back for you when you started, like what initially inspired you to actually merge like your passion for storytelling with your environmental like advocacy through film?
I think there was a real light bulb moment for me actually when I was living in Canada, where I could see how much better they were than Australia at simple things like recycling. Even just in Toronto, as you drive out of the city, the billboards were big installations along like in nature. So rather than you have a billboard, it would be a McDonald's sign made out of flowers. It was just simple things that like that that really struck me. You'd go put your bins out, but you'd separate it really, really well, and it was made so easily to manage. And I just thought, why is that? Why are they better at these things than we are? And what I came to really understand is that so many of the impacts were right on their doorstep. They were more acutely aware overall about the effects of the climate, and that was because they were seeing it firsthand a lot more. And that was back in 2012. So the world's changed a lot since then. I think more and more people are seeing the effects of climate change on their doorstep, but also just throughout my work, interviewing different groups, people in the Kiribati and in low-lying island nations, you know, they were seeing the effects of climate change all the time. When I was looking at that as a problem, I was like, well, how do you solve it? You don't want to wait until the effects are on your doorstep to start doing things. And it kind of came to me, well, if everyone had been living in Antarctica for the last 100 years, they'd see those effects. And Antarctica is such a huge driver of the world's climate. So how do you put all those things together? Well, virtual reality started really coming out and taking a rise, especially from 2016 onwards. And it was just obvious to me, this is how you take people to a place like Antarctica where they can see those effects of climate change on their doorstep firsthand without physically taking people to a place like Antarctica. And that really began a whole career now in connecting people to places that they wouldn't otherwise get to go to, and specifically giving them experiences like that they wouldn't normally have.
Yeah, because I feel that is really so important. You know, once people kind of see the effects of that, that is when you go like, oh, hang on, what is it that I'm doing in my life that's actually contributing to this? What can I do to make sure that there is an Antarctica in 100 years more? You know, that type of thing. And I feel sometimes it is very important to also like navigate, how do we tell that story? How do we balance it? Because for me, obviously coming from having a background in environmental science and everything, I'm always like, just give me more information. I just love hearing more. Give me the details. But for the average Joe on the street, that, you know, if you give them all of that information, that might be like, boom, my brain is blown. I actually now just don't want to do anything because that's too much. Like, How do you navigate that balance in your storytelling from, you know, being creative, from being environmental consciousness, and also something that you mentioned, which I loved, is that factual content? Like, how do you mush that all together that people walk away feeling that they should be able to do something?
Yeah, well, I think not beating people over the head with messages, that never works. That's certainly not the approach that we take. I think having people connected, like Antarctica as a subject and as a place, it just feels so far away for so many people. It's this far off place that you don't think really is connected to the rest of the world, but it's so important to the rest of the world. So telling that story was quite an easy one because, and the environmental aspect to it, because you can't really talk about Antarctica and show people this beautiful, wonderful place that's almost alien to most people without telling the story of climate change, how it's connected to the planet, how it drives so many weather systems, and the science that's being done there to understand it and the world better. So it has this huge global reach and global story, and that just naturally shines through. Also, just having people who know the landscape and the place best be those voices to the story. We don't do any narration. We have a little bit of narration at the start and the end, but it's all told from the people who know it best and reaching large audiences. But VR as a medium, often it gets called an empathy machine just because of the format that it provides. In a relatively short amount of time, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, you can be more versed and learn more about a subject and be more immersed than, you know, if you spent a week, a month, however long, trying to study that same topic in a learning environment. So, yeah, I've forgotten your original question now. But I went down a train of thought.
Yeah, well, no, I definitely think that kind of covered it. So it's talking about how do you tell the story or narrate the story without coming forth as being preachy? Like, what do you add, or what? How do you decide what to add, what to remove? What, like, how much info do you put into things so that it becomes more like everyone can watch this, relate to it? And you might have people like me walk away like, ooh, I might have wanted to see a little bit more on this, but I have a science background. So for me, I'm not just the average person. And yeah, just around that, is there specific markets that you guys also look at and say, we are going to make something that 90% of the people in Australia would actually feel like they can relate to it? Or yeah.
Yeah, well, it's all comes down to, at the heart of everything we do with any story, it is about the story and it's about the audience. And particularly in VR, it's that story living experience that I mentioned briefly before. You're not telling people a story in a traditional format. You're putting them in the heart of the story, and everyone in the VR experience is talking to you like you're directly standing there on, you know, that piece of iceberg with them, or in the helicopter sat right beside them. They're always talking to you like you're there. So that does a lot in itself, because rather than it feeling like you're watching a film, it's more of an experience. And it's that same old adage as well of a picture tells a thousand words. Well, VR, I think, tells a million words, because if you think about anything in your life that's really had a lasting impact on you, it's often a really awesome experience that you've had, or something that stayed with you is a really awesome memory. So we can recreate that for people in a virtual environment that feels really realistic, and create what we call presence. So people, even if it's just for a moment, feel like they really are flying in that helicopter or having a penguin run past them. And those visceral senses and experiences then have a greater impact on people throughout the storytelling experience. Yeah.
And what kind of challenges did you face bringing like this immersive environmental stories to life? And obviously we've kind of touched on why VR was important, but yeah, just to add on to that.
Other than the obvious of making a film in one of the harshest landscapes in the world, that actually wasn't, you know, we had such incredible support. This project wouldn't have happened without the Australian Antarctic Division, who's who we went down with to film. And it was one of the most remarkable things, actually, and the thing that stays with me the most. The people that are down working in Antarctica, they come from all walks of life. You know, it's not an environment that potentially they'd all normally work within, but somehow I think it's the blueprint for humanity in many ways because they're all there for a reason so above and beyond themselves that the community just works. And it's really inspiring to then be in that environment where you've got so many different people all there for this amazing reason above their own wants and dreams. So that's just a massive shout out to the environment in which a lot of the challenges then weren't challenges just because of how incredible the people were. But yeah, I mean, the logistically was it complicated because nothing like this film had ever been done before, especially in Antarctica. We were filming locations and having real drone permits, and you don't want to be leaving any type of footprint on the environment whatsoever or any impact on any animals. So you're really making sure that you've done safety checks times 100. That might be simple things like making sure that if the drone falls in the ocean, which never happened, and there's so many things, but worst case scenario, if that were to happen, it's floating so you can recover it. You're never going closer than you're supposed to with wildlife, and you're not having any impact like that. So all of the work, it was, you know, a year's worth of work on our behalf just to prepare and take redundancy on redundancy of everything down to Antarctica before we could even, yeah, start capturing. Well, you know, we're testing our cameras in industrial size freezers so that we can make sure that they were going to work at minus 22 degrees, all sorts of things.
Wow. That's amazing. That's so fascinating because once you actually see the film, there's so much that goes on in the film and everything. So yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. And I can just imagine, you know, it's not like hop on a plane and let's go to Antarctica and should all be good. So that's great. But like, we've spoken quite a lot about your Antarctica experience, but I mean, you have shared so many amazing stories. One of the stories was also about the rhino horns as well. There's just such an amazing list of things, and I'll try my best to list it in the show notes as well for our crazy birds so they can go and have a look more on some of the other things as well. But how do you actually choose those stories that you want to tell? How do you go about that?
Well, sometimes if it's an environmental story, I find I have to and I want to be passionate and be drawn to telling that story. Projects take such a huge amount of your time and your life, and it's not about just the end product. You have to be passionate through the whole process, or it definitely helps. So often it's sometimes a selfish calling because I feel like I have a need or a want to say or a subject matter that I'm passionate about or a form of justice that I want to bring forward or, yeah, just an important message. So quite often in the environmental space, I am choosing topics that I think that I'm best placed to tell. And if it's not me, then I'll go and find or I'll reach out to the community or the group or the people who are the right people to tell those stories and empower those stories in different ways. But if I'm directing or writing the story, definitely it's usually coming from a place of something that I feel I have an important contribution and something meaningful to say to the world, because that's what personally drives me, is always to leave a positive impact and be sharing and using these mediums for good and for impacting positive change.
I love that. That's so, so important. And I mean, there's so many things that through storytelling that we can drive all these messages, but how do you personally feel or believe that storytelling, specifically through film and like visual media, can actually drive tangible change in environmental awareness and action?
Yeah, I think something like we're spending 2.5 to 3.5 hours a day on average just on social media. The world is consuming media more than ever before. It's exponentially growing. It has such an impact on our biases, whether it's obvious or not. It influences our thoughts and our actions. So media in general is just such an influential market to be working in. And film and TV and factual documentaries have a real place in that and a real form of entertainment as an art form that lots of people are consuming. So there's so much that then goes with that responsibility. I see it as a call to action personally, because I love doing it, but it's a way that I can communicate and express myself in a creative sense, but also something that's powerful enough to reach audiences on huge scales. So we're consuming so much, in a roundabout way to answer your question, that the visual medium is just an incredibly powerful way to be impacting so many people, that of course it's going to have tangible impacts on people and how they live their lives.
Yeah, and I feel, you know, obviously seeing all these things and hearing some of these stories and facts and everything, it really can help us to shape our perception of what is actually, you know, the facts around this. But that also kind of brings me back to what you said in the beginning, to be a factual stories and to share that, because unfortunately, with so much fake news and everything going on, is there maybe any advice that you can give our crazy birds? Like, how do we sift through the things to kind of what is facts and what is fiction?
Yeah, I mean, I have this argument with my mum all the time, because her Facebook feed is so full of crazy conspiracy theories. And I mean, there's now entire university lectures that you can go and learn about recognizing deep fakes and ways to protect yourself against fake news. It's only going to get increasingly harder, especially with AI, but it's always digging beyond the surface, not just taking something on face value. If you read a news headline, what's the article behind that headline, because so much of it is just, you know, attention grabbing for clickbait. That's, you know, on a daily sort of basis, but it's also then why I like working in factual documentaries, because you have the time and space to tell a story. And in VR in particular, because it's a medium where you're trying to recreate being on these locations, we're not heavily editing the process. We're having really long takes. You're having a conversation with people as if you're standing there. So those are the ways that I think that we stay connected. And that's where I see myself playing a role as well, is how can I connect people to places and experiences that they might not just be instantly on their Instagram while they're scrolling, or on the news, or in the news that they're reading, seeking out these other formats and, yeah, digging a little bit below the surface rather than just looking at things face value.
Exactly. And I also feel like a lot of the times, if you actually go and read journals, like academic journals with stuff, and find it there. And I mean, yes, there has been some journals that has been some flaws and they get retracted with time. But I definitely feel it might be a bit more accurate than, you know, your Facebook feed. So yeah. Check the source.
Multiple sources. Yeah. There are so many formats out there now where you can fact check. Like ABC in Australia even does that. You can type in that, or they'll go and, you know, fact check things for people, and there's tools out there just to even do it on the fly. So,
oh, that's great. That's amazing. And from your perspective, just to give some of our crazy birds some advice, you know, if there's any powerful storytelling techniques that you can kind of convey that can really have like effective environmental messages, is there any tips or anything that you can give them that, you know, sounds a little bit not so preachy or didactic?
Well, I think it comes down to your audience. It's knowing your audience and communicating to them. And being authentic. Filmmaking can be more than just telling a story and being a platform. It's an example I'll use from an upcoming film that we're releasing soon. We've just been filming in the Kimberley region of Western Australia, which is one of the last great wilderness areas on the planet. We create this moment with a First Nations elder on Waterfall Reef, which, for those who haven't seen Waterfall Reef, it's this incredible reef system in the middle of the ocean that on king tides will be completely submerged in water, and within a matter of hours, the whole ocean literally drains away in front of your eyes and you're standing on the ocean floor. And we have a moment where we're standing there with a First Nations elder, and he's talking about the environment, his people, his culture, the love of it, what's happening, what you're literally witnessing as the ocean drains away in front of your eyes, and you have the whole reef to yourself. And that's just goosebumps moment. And then we cut to a drone where you're then flying right over the top that only you're going to experience if you're a bird, which no one is. So they're the sorts of spine-tingling, incredible moments that are extremely powerful storytelling ways of communicating that you're going to be having your attention and your audience captured so powerfully in moments like that. That's for the VR medium. But you can be creating moments like that on television or in how you tell a story. It's thinking from your audience point of view and how best would they want to experience something, be entertained, how will they interpret what you're saying. And when you do that, I think it's much less about beating someone over the head or being didactic about how you're telling a story. It's putting yourself in other people's shoes, which we can all think and learn to do more in life anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that empathetic point of view as well. It's something that a lot of the times we forget and we just want to tell something that we want to tell. But, you know, how would you want to receive that? How do you think someone want to listen to that story? So I love that advice. So thank you so much for that. You've just mentioned about this project, but is there any other current projects that you're working on that our crazy birds need to keep a listen out for? What's happening? Do you want to share anything with us?
Yeah, we've got a very exciting year or years ahead of us at the moment. Lots of projects on the go. So the Kimberley VR, The Last Great Wilderness, that will be released later this year around September across multiple different venues around Western Australia and Australia. Again, next best thing to being in one of the most amazing Last Great Wilderness areas in the world. After that, we take on a project called Journey of the Giants, which is about the humpback whale migration, starting in the centre of Australia, the whole ecosystem across the coast. Again, looking at it from First Nations point of view and the relationship they've had with humpback whales for over thousands of years, and then the science and research that's being done now, so the history overall. And that'll be, again, taking people underwater. You'll be swimming with a humpback whale and its calf, as they're, again, experienced people most won't have had an opportunity to do. And after that, we're doing a project in the Kermadec Islands, which is in New Zealand territory. If you draw a line from New Zealand to Tonga, it's pretty much smack bang in the middle there. And it's one of the most important ocean marine sanctuaries in the world. I sort of relate it to the Galapagos Islets in terms of importance. And it's just teeming with incredible life, both on land and underwater. So again, another really incredible opportunity to tell a part of the world that most people might not know about, but the experience will just be phenomenal. So they're three of our biggest projects coming up just in the next couple of years. Yeah.
Gosh, that's so exciting. Congratulations on that. And I'm looking forward to that as well. And one thing that for a lot of people that's actually based here in WA as well, you know, I just recently found out that, you know, we can actually do whale watching almost the whole year through. There's so many different whale species that comes through here. We are one of the only spots in the world where you can actually see this many different species that actually comes here. So it is just phenomenal, just like thinking about that.
Yeah, I get asked so many times, especially overseas, you know, why do I live in Perth? Why do I live in Western Australia? I think it's the most beautiful, luckiest place to live in the world. Obviously, you take it for granted when it's in your backyard, but we've got some of the most insane and diverse and unique species and natural wonders of the world here in Western Australia. It's all on our doorstep. So, so lucky.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And you also had a radio show as a child, I believe. Like, that was a fun fact. I was like, what? Can you, like, so I've been like wondering about this. Like, yeah, can you share with us about your radio show?
Yeah. So, growing up, most of my childhood, I lived in a small town called York, which is about an hour and a half east of Perth. And yeah, I decided, I don't know how, I was 11, that I wanted to take on a new project. So I went and approached the local radio station and said, can I have my own radio show? And they said, yes. So once a week for 2 hours straight after school, I had a radio program called New Generation, which I did for several years. Ran the whole thing on 101.3 York FM for several years, and would write my own scripts and get, you know, it was a good excuse for my mum to have to buy me CDs because I needed good, fresh content, that of material that I had to be able to provide each week. So yeah, I ran my own radio show and had guests on, had different people from the town, would run different competitions on there, all sorts of things from the age of 11 to I think I was 13 or 14 when I finished.
Oh, wow, that's so cool. So such a fun fact. And I mean, someone might be listening to this and think like CDs, what is that? Well, we can probably do you one better. We used to have cassettes as well, which, you know, you couldn't just fast forward to the next song. It was not like your modern day Spotify. So please do go and have a Google on what it is if you don't know. Giving away our age here, though. What has been one of your most important decisions that you've made around Mama Earth?
I mean, taking people to places that they couldn't and sometimes shouldn't go to. We don't want to be increasing CO2 in the world. We're trying to do the exact opposite. So structuring our business in a way that can do that for people. So like you said at the beginning of the interview, you feel like you've been to Antarctica now because you saw our film. So that doesn't then have to drive more tourism or taking people to somewhere that you don't want lots of footfall and traffic onto, but you still want to be able to have that connection and your curiosity and not have geography stop those experiences from happening. So we've taken that approach around so much of our business, and having less travel ourselves, being able to really minimize our impact when we go on any location. If it wasn't there beforehand, we're not leaving it there afterwards. And we've invested a lot of our own resources into making sure that we're leaving locations the exact same way that we found them. And that then obviously comes across in our storytelling as well. So I think that kind of plays into lots of different smaller decisions that we make in our company, but that's been a real driver in a lot of the decisions we've made of how we operate as White Spark.
I love that. And that is so, so important because, you know, even like so many times when you go to different like remote areas and then you discover, oh, humans has been here because, you know, I can see a soda can or I can see a water bottle or, you know, something that you're just like, I don't think, you know, these birds actually drink out of the water bottles.
It disheartens me a bit sometimes. We've just been camping all up the Coral Coast in WA and just take your rubbish with you. It's not even about, I mean, A, you can pick it. I always take a rubbish bag and I try and pick stuff up as my contribution to a place where I've gone and leave it better than I found it. But you go past rubbish bins and it's full and everyone's just left their rubbish all around it. It's so simple to take it with you. You took it with you there, take it back with you as well. Just really simple things like that make a big difference.
I always feel like I have a responsibility. Like if I purchase something, I have the responsibility to make sure that it is disposed of in a responsible way. So that's why a lot of the times I don't purchase stuff in plastic, because for me, soft plastics, especially here, I can't really dispose of it responsibly unless it goes to a landfill. So I feel like that's a no-go. So it's things like that. So think before you buy something, and then can you take stuff to a compost facility? Like, every time we go on holiday, we do save all of our food waste. And then like almost the second last day, I'm like frantically looking like, where's community gardens? Like, where can I take this? Like,
yeah, or containers for change. Yeah, so many different. And they're quite simple steps you can do. But it also comes from changing the attitude and the values, because if you're going to these beautiful locations in the world, you want to keep being able to go there. You want to see it pristine. You want to see it thrive into the future. And so having that pride of place and wanting to continue to have that sustainability of the environments, they're just such simple ways to ensure that that continues to happen.
Exactly. Oh, no, that's such a great point. And we are now going to move on to our final five. First one is, what is one social media account or publication that you actually follow?
Yeah, so I follow Paul Nicklin. He's a really incredible, well-renowned wildlife photographer and co-founder of Sea Legacy, and just such a great example of the power of conservation through beautiful wildlife photography and missions that he does.
Oh, I love that. And what is your hope for Mama Earth going forward?
I think similar to what we were just saying, forming good habits. You can do that on an individual. So if that's taking your rubbish with you when you go camping and you're proud of where you've just been and the experience that you've had, and then that extends to community level and that people still take those actions. Yeah, I hope that that continues and grows.
And what advice can you give our crazy birds this week to actually help out Mama Earth?
I think find an incredible positive story. So it's easy to get down into the doom and gloom of so much, especially with the environment. But there's so much light and passion that comes out of stories like that that are inspiring that then might resonate with you. And it's not about trying to solve everything in one hit. It is about doing those simple small steps that collectively will make a change. So that might even be as simple as just Googling some tips on sustainability. The internet's full of those awesome, crazy things like that. But finding something that does inspire you individually.
And what is one sustainability fact that you like to use in a room with people not yet on a sustainable journey?
Yeah, one of the first big facts that was just so easy to comprehend was just how intricately linked the rise in temperature is with CO2. We've got over 800,000 years of climate change data in ice cores with Antarctica temperatures, and you overlay CO2 with those Antarctic temperatures and they're almost locked. They're so tightly coupled from pretty much the Industrial Revolution onwards. You can just see how it's exponentially grown because of the increase in CO2 that we've done. So there's a really great chart by Professor Taz Van Ommen, who's an incredible glaciologist, that really exemplifies that. And we talk about it in one of our films as well. So having a look at just that fact alone can totally reshape your way of thinking, because if you then can see how CO2 is impacting so much of the planet, there then are lots of individual ways that you can take that into your own hands, because we're all contributors to transport, food, fashion, power. It might be a simple thing of not having your air conditioner on freezing cold. It's also great for your power bill, or other things in summer. Dry your clothes, don't use your dryer, like air dry your clothes rather, not using a dryer, or turning power off at the source. They're all little things that on that bigger picture make such a big difference. So definitely have a look. I invite people to go and have a look at that really great graph. It's not just by Taz, it's all by scientists around the world, but that's a really great one.
Oh, awesome. And where can people actually find you and also watch some of your films?
Well, if you're in Western Australia or on the East Coast in Canberra or near Canberra, both of our films, Beyond the Milky Way is our other, which we haven't talked about, and The Antarctica Experience are playing at the West Australian Maritime Museum in Fremantle, down at the Albany Museum in Albany, and also at the National Museum of Australia in Canberra. And they'll be playing until the end of March, or to the end of at the WA Museum, or to the end of summer in Canberra and Albany. And that's both of our documentaries. So if you want to go to Antarctica yourself, or you want to learn about space, Beyond the Milky Way, just as a quick plug, is about if we'll find life in the universe. The world's largest telescope is currently being built in West Australia and in South Africa, and it will be the thing that will find it. Incredible game-changing astronomy that's going to entirely change our perspective of space and where we are and our place in it. So yeah, both of those films are playing. And then otherwise, LinkedIn, Instagram, we've got a White Spark Pictures page on there, and Facebook. They're the best ways to connect with White Spark or me individually.
Awesome. And we will link all of that up in our show notes as well. So crazy birds, don't have to stop your car and pull over to write this down. Go to the show notes. I'll put it right there. That's amazing. Thank you so much for being such an amazing guest on the show and for all the wonderful work that you guys are doing, because it makes such a difference, you know, to share those experiences and make more people see why it is that we are fighting so hard to protect this beautiful planet of ours.
Yeah, well, and thank you. Thanks for having me on and for your part in the podcast and that role that plays on the larger industry perspective too. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you so much. And that's a wrap. Huge thank you for our amazing guest for being on the podcast and for sharing their journey with us. You can find the show notes of this episode on the MamaEarthTalk.com's website. The biggest thank you goes out to all of you crazy birds for listening to the podcast. If you have not already listened to all of the episodes, You can go back to a few of them. You will absolutely love them. I really enjoyed recording every single one of them, and I really hope that you enjoy listening to them. There's over 100 episodes, so if you feel a little bit lost on which one to listen to next, maybe select one of the episodes with guests that you might want to know more of and start from there. If you enjoy the episodes, why not tell a friend about the podcast and maybe share an episode with them? Let them know that we are here and we are waiting for them with open arms, and they are all very welcome to join the Crazy Birds globally. If you have a question for me, please send them over. The best way to get in contact with me would probably be a DM on Instagram. You can either send it to my personal, which is at Zero Waste Mariska, or the podcast, which is at Mama Earth Talk, or send me an email at hello@mamaearthtalk.com. If there's a particular guest or topic that you would like to hear on the podcast, let me know. I love to hear from all you crazy birds. New episodes are uploaded every second Monday, so make sure to subscribe that you do not miss a thing. Mama Earth has a voice, and it's us crazy birds.